Mr. Cowan's Reel 11. Christmas 1944, do you recall what happened then?
I can't recall much of it because we were in the line in. And I think we'll have to celebrate later on when we came over the line.
Was it the usual army Christmas event?
As best as I could. I mean, we came with line back. If I get my idea a little bit, I had them. I got the band instruments up. And I'm in the queue, had meant to get my, but our company was in the farmhouse and whatnot, you know, and they were really good farmhouse. The farmhouse that had been shared, you know, really. And it was just, and the weather was quite, it was cold, but there was no snow or something. And we just looked at the band up and a few, and the biggest place we could not have seen some whatnot, but, you know. But,
did you get a Christmas type meal?
I think that at that time we managed to get a food parcel from home. I think myself, they sent them the VS, the echelon where they all the stuff was kept. They sent them to our HQ, they sent all the food parcels. So it was a time for the girls to get a meal, because that's when you used to get a meal, it's all set here when you come out the line. They get the meal and the food parcels, which were sort of have the Christmas event, well, the so-called Christmas event.
So in the line, your mail was kept back?
Oh yes. I didn't tell you something you looked at. There's no time to read it anyway. I read it.
Is mail important to the soldier?
It's very important to the soldier, yes. That's the first thing. If there wasn't any mail for a certain soldier, it was looking bad. You imagine it, you know, they've been out there a couple of years or so, and they didn't get a letter this time. Wonder what was happening with the mail and that, you know.
You must have had men who didn't get letters, even worse, got the Dear John type letter.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you recall any experiences of that?
I'll tell you what the battalion had. It's not really in the books anyway, but our battalion took notice of the people having any letters come regular, you know. And they sent their names and addresses back to Britain to the YMCA, for people to write to them. This soldier has put in his family, and they sent me to give a pen pal. It happened quite a couple of times. A soldier would get, I know one occasion where a chap and I think it's called him, Jonas, and I put you, he never had. And three times we came to the line, we never had a letter from him. And I said to him, are we not married? He said, no. He said, no. He said, I found out that my mum died. Her mum died before he came to the line. And he said, son of my young, this was the name. No government. And I sent his name back. Oh, months and months after. He got a letter. Comes to me, he says, I've got a letter from a girl. He says, he says, he wants to be a pen pal. He says, did you send me? I said, I was told to send him. He says, thanks. He says, I've got somebody like you. So it was a repeat of a letter from somebody. That was only one of them, it was quite a few. It's just spread on the battalion of who had getting their hurts. Swim so hard get their poor book and poor girl out of the spine. And I really feel sorry for them.
There were a lot of sympathy for those people.
Oh, yes.
What about those who got letters from home saying the wives had gone astray? Did you come across that?
Some of them used to get, try and get leave, you know, as lucky for coming to mind and try and get leave. In certain circumstances, they did get these, you know. But it was the old wag that certain sort of the clever ones, these are the ones who caused trouble when a company commanders and that sort of one. Used to write back and tell their wives to write back and say that so and so is to try and get, but to forget that it was thoroughly investigated in Britain before they got the chance to get the line. That's all it was.
No man went, you know, had an adverse effect when they got a letter like that. They didn't go wild or.
I have a letter from my father and mother and tell me that my wife's going with another chap or something. I said, what shall I do? And she said, right, go and say, here's your assurance, go see a company commander and tell him, you should take it from there.
How important was the role of the padre?
He was quite a good one. He used to come visit you, isn't he? Yes, about a couple of days ago. Yeah, he was smashing it. He was a major. Actually, he was a CV because when we're always at church, there was a CV Catholic, and he in the 80s used to come down countries and some of the other things and all that. But we had a good repertoire with the party. As soon as he came up the line, he was there. I've seen some things up the line and with the soldiers going from company to company and from platoon to platoon, and a few words of land. When I was just sort of dressed before the weather and the attack, he would be there.
So he did actually, he was up at the front where the danger was?
Oh, yes, no, he didn't.
What was his role? Was it to, again, to get involved with the wounded? And
yes, this kind of yes, you should see the wounded, but you should see the dead, you know, contacting them. See the folks that back home on time. You should get tagged up and whatnot and send back home there. He used to kill him up there. And then I used to kill him up. And shoot him on the next year. He said, well, they're going to be a bit down right every man now. From now on. Yes, I'm going to get a nice polished badge up, he said. And put it on your hat. And he did. He said he had a special badge for that for religion, you know, because he's always put in his side cap. Put his peaking cap, he's in his side cap. When he left, he was missed by it. We had a new party to after we came back from Egypt, we went to Egypt. Reconnoitered it, getting very reckoning, but so I guess, causing more troubles and we're sorting more troubles. When we came back into them, after that, he left us like this.
Did, in constant danger, in action, did you have a personal religious philosophy yourself that saw you through these hard times?
I put the day into hell with your mother. I told you that I was given to me by a soldier in Brunswick, Sergeant Dalton in Brunswick. She said, I give you two tips. She sort of took out the leg and goes, you know, I was asking all different questions. And she said, look, you look sensible at it. She said, I give you some tips. Behave yourself for the first 6 months. Go for stripes. Once you get a stripe, if you get it one stripe, you see, and you're still everybody's getting called corporals and sergeant, but you get a stripe, it's on your leader. You see, you'll find it's a lot easier. Mine, you'll find you have a leading mind later on, right? You see. And this, I'll give you another tip. Live for today and to hell with the mother. When you go to sleep.
You had no particular religious views of your own?
Yes, I was a regular chapel person. I mean, the lad used to go to church, the Syrian church, and after I left school, not to have I joined the chapel because I could be a football person.
But this wasn't important to you in the sense of living through actions, it was just this day to day business.
Yes. I mean, I can't see anybody trying to live for tomorrow, and they didn't know what was going to happen tomorrow, especially in where we were.
The medical officer, did you see much of him?
Very, very, unless you see anything wrong with someone in the company of the two members. But he was always nearby, so we had our own troops with medical kids, carrying medical kids. So if it wasn't if only a freshman, then we should just shove on the first aid and get to come with the first aid kit. As I thought, the service was sent back to the company.
And they were closest to you in the action situation? And at some point behind there would be the regimental aid post, no doubt. Mm-hmm. was again, was that relatively close to where you might be fighting?
No, it was close. You hadn't very far to go. No, it was close.
And then you also had your stretcher bearers who...
Stretcher bearers are all medical men. If there's only a flesh wound or something like this, you know,
how did the company, platoon, regard the stretcher bearers? Well, in the sense of, you know, were they brave men? Were they looked upon as being...
I said before they were brave men, I said as many times on the fire, they've got to come up right under the line and take a wounded man back on the stretcher. I mean, and I admit, I'll say hundreds of times, and I've seen a bunch of times come up with things. Pass me, now I was here from the beginning. Pass me, I'm going to take somebody from the side of me because I've been wounded or something like that. So that one. I said, they wouldn't fight as much as we do.
So you would lose men in your own platoon, men that you knew well?
Yeah.
How does that affect the rest of you when one of your comrades as close as that gets hit, wounded or killed?
Well, it affects you, so it's certainly affects you. I mean, you just have to sort of wash it by. I mean, if another soldier stopped to see if he's made fair, so he hit, if you stop, make sure that you should pass the word down that he was wounded. Or if he thought he so and so was just, you know, I should sort of carry on there.
Did you come hardened to situations like that?
You've got to be hardened. Even with your own troops, it would be hard to work them, and then you have to get them through.
Was there a feeling of relief that it wasn't you that was hit?
Always a feeling of relief. Always a feeling of relief.
Yes.
So
really, yeah. You're sorry for the man, but...
Yeah. Mm.
And that kind of thing kept you going, did it?
Yes, kept
it. How important is the spirit of the unit, I'm thinking in terms of the friendship and the comradeship, in the role of keeping you in action?
Very good. I know the lads in our company was quite good. I don't know what their company was quite good. As I say, you had the odd morning, but we set shop, stopped morning when I was in as I say, when you come out of the time, I don't know, we had to get out for us. So, get a chance, thanks to them. Same thing over there. Because, I mean, some of that was in my company. The strength of somebody in D company or A company or H2 company. And I've seen them for a while. I was glad to see them back when you come up the line. You see, straight away, that was one of the first things you seen about a soldier come up the line. He said, make sure he was on safety net and his mates were safety in the platoon. And if you had friends in other platoons, you should go and try and find them and find out if they're just in the world. Ask the company commander if you can find out so and so, and I said, still all right. Yeah, it was marvelous what to realise that that's what was happening during the war. But they kept a great bond on us as well.
A very close bond.
Very close bond, yeah.
And were you able to use that kind of bonding to encourage men who might have wanted to go away, who might have run off, or to keep them with you?
I think it held a lot.
And that they wouldn't let the unit down.
I had a good platoon and I had a good section. I said, what was a section, a special section, any section, but I don't feel too late for me. But I had a good platoon, good officers, and a good team officers with us. And I had a good repertoire with the lads. And if I had anything done, I'd done it. I mean, if they grumbled, I should say, what is it? So I'm calling it, why I'm not for, I should say, well, with any board, only the board knows how to do it, and sat there, I said, kick him along, you can do it better, so he done it, we didn't do it for him. And he said, really? Yeah, but I'll be.
So that was your management in a sense, the persuasion rather than outright orders.
Very, very, unit in the lane, you have to give direct orders. It was something to do with the advance or our own safety. That was when we were a real agro sergeant. We had the agro sergeant, we had done the business, the army business. But all the lane will have great work as well as the lane. There's nobody calling the lane.
Have you any other memories of the involvement in the Garigliano area where you were at Christmas, New Year,
1944-5?
You went to Egypt first. You recall leaving for Egybt in the February 1944?
Yeah, I can't remember. All of a sudden, came with the other building like that. They were coming up the lane, and now the trucks was moving. And I had to get to this certain point to embark in Venice. And we thought the men of one may be coming home. And then the company commander said, the trouble left back in Egypt, we've got to go to Egypt. The report said. And that was the only time I was on the same boat, the tip Cape Town Cattle. It was the same boat that picked up and took them. I'm trying to think, well, pick up now. As soon as I seen it, I'm trying to think where the doctor went from. But as soon as, was it Naples? So the Cape Town Cattle. Yeah, and I saw my boat at the end when I left in on February 1942. And it's funny, to be on the same boat twice. It was a smashing ship, smashing crew.
Was it a long journey? Italy to Egypt?
I don't think it was. Not as long as come to me and didn't go. No, that's not been very long. I never had a port said, I think.
You weren't disturbed on the journey by any action at all?
No. It was like a coming up the engine to get to the city again. Involved in. You were given your KD. All the heavy stuff was taken off you. And then you kit it again. And you like KD and whatnot. But we hadn't done that for quite a while. And you were asked what to wear. And then you were maybe here for a few weeks, which we were. And we went to Cairo first. We're in tents, I think. They were in tents outside. We attended the
Kassassin, does that ring a bell?
Big
tented camp. Did you get leave?
Yes, we were different companies were different things. We had to sort that out. You see, there's so many boats, certain things. And I think I had 4 or 5 days.
What was Cairo like?
Well, it was nice. It was just with I went to Alexander, instead of going to Cairo. If you go that way, so you just pick it, and I go to Cairo, Alexander. And I went to Cairo for a day, and it was me and two or three more sergeants. We got the bus to Alexander, kind of right. Went to Stanley Bay. That was a famous Stanley Bay at Alexander. It was a beautiful day. At one time, it used to be part for Europeans and part for Egyptians. But it was beautiful there. I had a full year there.
Where did you stay overnight?
Just pick different hotels. It was up to ourselves. Up to ourselves. We're given the freedom. Up to ourselves. The kind of a few up out here. Money from the Egyptian money. The sailors told me, you can go where you like. If you want to go to, there's not an army place in Cairo where you can go for bed and breakfast like that. And even in Alexandria was having breakfast tables for army. We saw them places out. The hotels were especially for troops. And it wasn't very funny. Yeah, but the ship was alright. There were many other Egyptians there.
Were a lot of base troops? There seemed to be more people there than there were in the front.
Oh, there was quite a few. Yes, there were quite a few Egyptians there. Regiments up there. And as I say, when in Cairo for the ride, and they went up to the from there to, as I said, I've been before.
Tel Aviv.
Tel Aviv, and there.
What were you doing there?
There's supposed to be a bit of trouble with some, I don't know what they were like, positioning or something, but they were anti-British, so it's like, still had a German in the center, and I'm calling some in Tel Aviv. But we went to, and I can't remember much about it because it was all over before. I'd been there. I just sent one to a different company in Korea. We captured a lot of prayers and took them back to Egypt, Egyptian. Yes, to a big Egyptian camp. We were from prison. You know. But we did not say, I don't remember saying that. I didn't even know this year. But I think we had a few wages. But I don't know any of us today.
Well, was this kind of rioting then?
Rioting was, yeah.
So you're acting in a sense in support of the civil power to retain to retain order. Did you start training there again?
Never stopped.
And what kind of training were you having?
Well, we tried a manual or sound trainer, but the battalion that had been up in the city, North Africa before, most of the battalion knew all about sound training. It sort of just fell in, and I trained for the sun. But when we came back out of Tikai, went that way, the camp before we came back, we were just in the normal things again. But when we came back to Italy.
Were you not doing, again, hill training? Because sand training would really not be the right kind of training for you.
Kinds of training, but it was all mixed up, you know. Nothing they'd done with rules and whatnot.
Because you're never going to meet sand in Italy, were you?
No. That was just for the action of them up on the coast. I'm thinking, that place in Egypt? Anyway, we went to these two places. I can't remember them. We sorted out the trouble. And I can't remember how long we were there. I was trying last night, I think. But it was 6 weeks or less. And we came back. Then changed to get back onto it.
Was this a disappointment to know you're going back to Italy?
Oh, yes. It is all the Italian. All the men were drumming. Okay, we went back on the boat and come back to Italy. And we landed at Naples again. And we came back to Naples. And we took transport. It was similar to the city of Germany. My memories are blank from arriving back in Italy, so we were sitting on the outside of Germano. It was a bit trouble again.
What are your memories of your involvement there?
Quite a few, because there had been quite a few attacks. Well, I bet the jewelry, but I can't remember. But what was involvement? We didn't go straight from Italy, directly from Egypt, straight into the Rhine. We came out of line first, and we had still a bit of fight to do. We went about the area outside of Germany, you know, different places. I can't remember the name.
Was that again a mountainous area, hilly area?
Mountainous area.
What were you trying to do?
Well, the whole battalion was trying to take Germany itself.
And where was Germano in relation to, you know, to yourselves? Was it higher up on the hills or what?
It was semi intermediate, you know, hills and big flags. It wasn't high, it was in a hilly town.
Was it a big town?
Oh, yes, a big town, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the biggest. And I remember after we took Germany, and we went from there.
Did the Germans defend it, you know, strongly?
Yeah, I'm trying to think one. Here we defended strongly, and I'm trying to think one. And here we were on there, and I had a
Well, what happened to you on the hill?
I don't know, I wasn't involved. We were back there, but some of the companies were involved in it. And I wasn't there involved much in it. I was more on the bottom. On the bottom on California, you know. But it was a hard battle. Concerned the left of me. I think it's parachute. But we weren't the only battalion. The whole brigade was there, you know. It was 1560 here in the country. As I say, we should change different numbers of grades every time in the National Party because there was some other units with us, different units. Now, I remember going from, at and it didn't matter, as I remember, and the next case was Cecina, I was involved in the same local as Cecina.
What was the terrain like there?
It was flat.
You were on the plains? What are memories of Cecina?
Well, my best memory was our company was told we were all frontiers and they hadn't been long evacuated, you see, with the German troops. And they knew that the monastery had been holding the troops and a lot of cities in the vaults, right? These passages were enormous under the monastery. You see, these were five miles and miles of passages. And my company, they probably was told to take trying to get the monastery, and got the monastery.
Do you recall the fighting for the monastery?
It was very little fighting, as a matter of fact. As I say, the fighting is outside the Cecina away then. And there was some through fighting side of the Cecina, but I didn't know who they were at the time. But we were coming to the monastery. And we went in the monastery, I took my platoon to the monastery. And I was amazed. The first one was the nuns. This big door, that's when they were going to open it. He said, Tedeschi, I'm going to Tedeschi, and I said, yeah. And we knew straight away there must have been some Germans up behind us. Sure. So good. And the kids, there must have been hundreds of kids and women and whatnot. So I tried to quiet them down, but that's what we were doing. And he kept going to this nun and go to Tedeschi and catch them. Anyway, the first German soul was it. Had his hands up, came out of one of the rooms with his hands up. He said, "That's a good start." I sent him the one of the troops. I asked, I told him to come on it. Couldn't come on it. And the officer was an officer. But he sent some more troops in the back end to try and get away from to make sure, because there was hundreds of people down here. And I think it was quite about another 4 children that were. The kids that were hitting in the road, they were glad to see where the kids and the women out there, they were glad to see the British, the English, they were English women, and coming up, they were trying to keep them back in different rooms, you know, in the passages. And then these two lads came in, sitting with the spurs in it, but that time, what that time we picked up was, the Deathly was just on the corner to the Deathly, so we just went in. And these two Germans were just sitting there waiting for a bus coming. They've been sitting there telling one thing or the other. They knew with all their stuff. So anyway, we captured that four in there. And then we had to go around trying to make cases for them, settle out all the children on the mill journey. And we took the whole of the monastery. Right up to the pews in the big cathedral top of them. And we were there for about 2 days. No, I was there for about a day. And we had as I come straight down, and I go to top of the Cecina, there was some trouble there, and to join Amelia Stringer and his company. I went out with Amelia Stringer, and I think it was Sergeant Major Clavin, I said, maybe that's the Sergeant Major, and kind of this Major Stringer was getting good on the backside. Anyway, I went out with that 10 down and took it 4 weeks up this narrow street. And I went on the street, started. Walking on the other side, and the opposite of the room was just going to be different. So I heard a smack, and I shot him out there on the ground. And this smack and machine gun right out from the pocket. And I see them, the bullets going between the legs, the ricochets, and they hitting the ground and going between the legs. I said, "Would you all went down?" Anyway, we got down and I passed the word back so that it was in the shop for the machine gun. And we had the Bart Phillipson, one of my sergeant with me, he was a roommate in Bart. He was sitting with the 2 or 3 lads. And he got them kids and threw them in there and killed them. And when I got to that 10 round, the bullet had caught his ankle. Yeah. So we were just minutes away from. Again, I said the kick of a machine, a German machine gun, was handy because he knew it was somewhere around the corner. He said that.